Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, David?
Yes.
Okay.
You can hear me?
Hear you. Yes.
I think. And Frank, are you there?
I am.
Oh, good.
Hello, Frank.
Good. How are you all?
Good.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to say good evening to all the people that might be listening in. I know the last time we had about 20 people on the air listening to us, according to the stats here. I want to welcome you and tell you that conversation tonight, for those that are listening, you can call in. The number to call in is 646-668-8740. But I want to get started with, you know, it's the holiday season. It's like Frank dropped his call, but it's the holiday season and we're about to go shopping. Looks like it's me and you, Ron, right now. And people are shopping for men for all kinds of things. And when I was younger, I know that my mother hated to get presents that did anything that worked. You couldn't buy her a waffle iron or I think my father got in trouble when he bought her a vacuum cleaner at one time. So, but I know that men seem to have an issue with telling people what they want. But women are good at giving men working tools. So you might get a lawnmower or a new drill or something like that. But I do think that times are changing. And I think men need to stand up and tell people what it is they want for Christmas. I mean, I think, ladies, you need to go into the jewelry stores and not only – because I passed a jewelry store the other day, and it was several men in there. They're all buying jewelry and stuff. But men like nice things, too. You got any comments, Ron?
Yeah, I think for the most part, men tend to shy away from expressing their opinions a lot on everything, including what they would like as a gift, and not just for Christmas, but for, you know, birthdays or whatever. But I don't see anything at all wrong with that changing and men speaking out and saying, you know, this is what I'd like. And, you know, I personally have no problems doing that, and it actually saves the person getting the gift a lot of aggravation. And, you know, maybe I won't tell them, you know, I want exactly this, but maybe I'll say, you know, these are some of the things that I'd like, and so there's some element of surprise. But I feel that a lot of men they're not very talkative about anything in general, and so when it comes to telling the other person what it is they want, they try to, you know, they keep it to themselves. But hopefully that'll be changing.
Hopefully so, because I think, it's the holiday season, and we have to also go out and buy gifts. And I know that we're always puzzled. I remember last year going to the Coach store for a sale, and the took me a half an hour to get to the counter to buy what I thought was a inexpensive bag for a lady who the bag was very expensive. But, you know, to me, it didn't. So we don't know sometimes what to buy. We just go by what we hear. For us men, getting the things that we want, I think we're all going to have to step up to the plate and start insisting that, you know, the women listen to us as much as we listen to them, because we know not to buy them anything to work with, no vacuum cleaners, no pots and pans and those kinds of things. Frank, are you in this conversation?
But you know, David, is Frank here? I guess not.
He's on the, Frank, are you there?
Yeah, just a minute. I'll try to get, I am here, just a second. I'm sorry that you can't hear me. Just a second.
We can hear you now. Okay. But go ahead, Ron. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, the more I think about this topic, actually, I think a lot of women kind of shy away from telling us what they would like to, because I'm trying to remember if there was ever a point where when a woman would say, you know, this is what I would like. And it's hard to come up with an instance where that happened. So
I don't know what women you've been hanging out with, Ron, because every girl I know, there was a girl in my office who kind of came up to me and said, you know, for Christmas, I would really like something sparkly that you have to go to the jewelry store and buy. I mean, women are not.
Well, I'm sorry. I think that's just a bit arrogant, because, you know, they're after something expensive, and, you know, and I think they're taking advantage. I guarantee you, if I went up to my assistant and I said, you know, what would you like for Christmas, she would probably say, oh, don't worry about it, you don't need to get me anything. You know, I guarantee you that's what she would say.
Try it tomorrow.
Okay, yeah.
Not next week, what happens. Just try that. But you're probably going to get stuck with having to buy her something really expensive if she says you agree that what she wants is what you're going to get. You're going to end up at the Coach store like I was, trying to get something, and you don't know why.
Oh, no, I'll figure out a way to get out of that one.
So here's another topic. Let's talk about in-laws, because a lot of people do a lot of traveling and going to your in-laws' house for meals and those kinds of things. Women complain because after the dinner, the men go watch football. That seems to be a big topic of discussion. But what I've noticed lately is a lot of women are getting into the sports themselves, but there's the Monday night football, and, you know, so it's more of a team effort, a family effort. But it used to be where they complained about us. But I do think that it's an opportunity to bring in the family to join us, but do we want that? Because usually it was a time that we went out, and that's what we did. The men would go watch football, and the women would go do whatever they did. Now, I do think that more women are getting into sports. I see more women talking about sports lately than I've ever seen before, and taking the effort to be in these games. And Ron, have you seen that also? I mean, I think it's good.
I have, and I'm sure I'm going to upset some of the women, or maybe all of the women that are listening, but I don't see any problem whatsoever in doing things separately. I mean, there is a lot of good to be said for doing things as a family and together, but you don't want to carry that, in my opinion, to an extreme where you're like side by side to each other every single moment of the day. And I think it's good for men to be watching sports, or, you know, with their friends or whatever, and for women to do the same, not watching sports, but doing whatever it is they enjoy doing, whether it's shopping at the mall or, you know, going to get their nails or hair done. I think there's a lot of value in doing things separately in any kind of relationship.
Okay, it looks like there's someone else on the line. I think we have someone calling in.
No, that's
Harold.
That's
Frank. And there's also someone else. Is that Harold?
I don't know.
Okay.
Because I was losing connection.
All right, so callers, if you do want to call in, the number for calling in is 646-668-8740. Let's go back to this, men and how we act when we get out to, you know, I think we do a very good job overall on in-laws and kids, and then after the meal, watching football and going home. So I think that's traditionally the way it's been. I don't think that, you know, we really have to embellish on that, but I think I see it starting to be a family time.
I think it's a tradition that shouldn't die, personally, in my opinion. You know, like I said already, I mean, there's a lot of value to doing things separately, as well as doing some things together. So, that's a tradition that goes back decades, centuries, whatever. And I personally don't see anything wrong with it.
All right, Frank, can you jump in if you can?
Yeah. Point that you were making, David, if you would.
We talked about what men want for Christmas, and that men, it seems that men don't tell women as much as women tell men about what they want. A lot of women will tell you, I want jewelry, and all the commercials and things are geared toward what we give women for Christmas, but for men, we don't usually say what we want. I know that women will, most of them will tell you, I don't want anything I have to work with. Don't give me any cooking tools or any sewing tools. But for men, that's what we get. So my point was, it's time for us to stand up and say what it is what we want.
Well, you know, for me, what happens is I learned when I got out of the Navy, I learned that probably you can always buy a gift for women if you go to the jewelry section. So that's a very successful place for me to keep someone happy. And I've gotten also into purchasing purses that are relatively expensive. That's been a run because people notice them. Other people notice the items before maybe even the individual who's having it appreciates it. But for men, my situation is that I always feel like I'm very fortunate and very blessed. And so I really don't look for any particular items during the holidays or birthdays or Christmas. And so it is hard for me to figure out something that I need or want because I kind of feel like I can pick up anything that I want at any time. So that's why you didn't hear much from me on this subject.
But what is it that you said about purses? You said purses are relatively inexpensive?
Yeah. No. What happens is I'll generally go out and I go on these trips now. When I go on these trips, I kind of make my wife come in the store with me, and I generally will buy her a purse. And sometimes she really hesitates because she doesn't want it, but I'll kind of buy her a purse. It'll be, let's just say, it's over $200, and then she'll probably won't even use it for 6 months or more. But when she does use it, she generally gets caught. Yeah, so Frank is back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had the call drop there for a second.
Yes, it did drop. That's unfortunate. Frank McKinney.
Okay, you're back again.
Yeah, I'm on my cell phone. I'm trying a different approach. So where are you all in the show?
David, are you there?
He must have had a power failure or something on there.
Oh, is this Frank?
It is Frank, yes.
Oh, yeah. I can hear you, but I guess David's gone.
Yeah, what I did is I redialed in on a cell line because of the internet connection seemed to drop quite frequently.
Yeah, I'm trying to log in again now and see what happens.
Oh, did you get dropped off also?
Hello?
Yes, this is Frank.
Oh, okay. I can hear you.
Yes, and I hear you well.
We lost David, I guess, right?
Yeah. That might be him coming on.
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please hold and you'll be able to listen to the show.
Frank?
Frank?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wow, what is that?
It's Frank is on the line.
Frank, you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, but I hear echo.
Yeah, that's me. What I'm gonna do is keep quiet for a minute and try to re-log on another way.
Okay.
And,
is David here?
This is Frank.
Oh, okay. I can hear you, Frank.
Good. We still don't have David, right?
I don't think so. I haven't even connected through my computer, so I'm not sure how I can hear you.
Oh, because what we've done is both dialed a common line that's open, I guess what I would call an open mic.
Yeah, but I'm not using myself. I'm not using my cell phone.
Oh.
Strange. Let me see what happens if I click on Direct Net. We should probably test this out before a Sunday, right?
Yeah, I would have. I think he wanted to use me today, but I was at a concert I was doing at the church for a Christmas concert, so I missed the opportunity to interface with him.
Hello?
Hi, Frank McKinney.
Oh, hey, Frank. It's Ron again.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll dial in the old... Were you and I the only one on the line today beside David?
It looks that way, which is strange, right?
Yes.
Wonder what happened.
Yeah. Well, last week I think the problem was is he got dumped. I'm trying to log in on the computer.
Oh, okay.
Let me see if I can hear myself.
My computer froze up. I'm going to try to do this again and see what happens.
So while we're waiting on David, what do you think about the issues that have been in the news recently?
Trump again and all of that, or?
Well, that would be one. Yeah, he made some statements that have been interesting.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of him, and it's scary to me that he's leading in so many of the polls. I'm afraid it's going to be him and Hillary.
Okay.
I shouldn't say I'm afraid. I mean, if that were the case, I would be voting for the lesser of two evils, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like I said, I don't know, a few weeks ago when I took a little road trip up to Valdosta, Georgia, and I understand why so much of the country is for Donald Trump, and it's kind of scary that it's not just scary, it's
so I think those type of issues coupled with some people want to fight a war and others do not. And I think also the way the previous president left office. The previous president left office with the economy in the tank. And helping out businesses.
You're talking about Obama?
Well, talk about Bush, when he left office, the economy was in the tank, was going in the tank.
Yeah, and Obama took over a mess.
Yeah, he took over a mess, but he also took over the bailout that the previous president had started. And just maybe people didn't want to bail people out because they didn't get bailed out. Okay? But I think that everything that's happened is kind of attributable to the personalities that are being displayed, the loss of the Confederate battle flag in a lot of locations, the police issues in Ferguson or the people issues in Ferguson, depending on what side is looking at it. So I think those are the contributing factors. Now, I hesitate to ever criticize Mr. Trump because for me, I like history and I have a high appreciation. So I'm really looking to see how many numbers of people he can acquire under his umbrella. Because for me as an Afro-American, it kind of tells me where we are as a nation from where I came in. I came in the late 40s, one of the baby boom generation. So my perspective on America, that America had a lot of discrimination that existed in the country. And so I'm always measuring is how much better it is today than it may have been yesterday.
Yeah.
And how, yes.
And also the Hispanics and the immigrants and a lot of groups will be using this, I think, as a way to gauge the climate of the U.S. right now. And
right.
I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel like we've actually taken a few steps backwards in some ways. And I think I attribute that in large degree to Trump. And his arrogance and his comments and his being unpolitically correct and I think that's actually awoken, if that's a word, awoken
right.
some of these sentiments that people were starting to maybe not think about as part of their daily lives. But I think he's bringing all of that to some degree back to the forefront in a lot of people. That's just the impression I get, it's too bad. It's too bad that if that is the case.
I think that's the music that he's playing, and I think he's playing that music I think, to be honest with you, I think there's a guy that's basically a Democrat that most of his life who is, figures that he can become the president on the Republican ticket because the Republicans have not done well in a couple elections. And then I think he's also a person who is trying to be in sync with what he figures the terminology will get him nominated into office. So he's appealing to a segment of the population that, according to the news, is, you know, is probably 65% non-college educated.
Right.
And the other thing is that which makes it interesting is that he, I think that the population of people in the United States may be at its worst situation. 55% of the people would vote for anybody that was qualified for office, not based on their race or their ethnicity or anything like that, and that there might be 45% of the people, that would be at the worst scenario, that would say, no, if you're a Mormon or if you are homosexual, I wouldn't vote for you, you know, for office no matter what. So I think that Trump is trying to appeal. I think he may know that the numbers are different than what I just claim they are, but I think he's trying to appeal to that segment of the population that even if they need medical care, they don't want medical care because the government's involved in it. Now, did you hear the phone calling?
Yeah, I think it's David calling. David, is that you?
Hello? Hello, David.
Frank.
Yes.
I got a text message from David saying,
oh, my God, what is going on? Now I'm getting another call from New York.
There's an echo now as well as a phone ringing.
He's saying to call in to the number. Are you still there, Frank?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I think Dave's going to probably have to go back to his...
Hello?
David?
Hello?
Text Dave and tell him to use his old... use a dial-up number, because that's the number I'm using. At least you can get online. Just a minute. Hold line. This is Frank McKinney. Hello? Hello? Frank McKinney.
Oh, you're there. Okay.
Yes.
I don't know.
Just hold on. I'm gonna try to call him on.
Okay.
Get a three-way.
Okay.
Hello, can you hear me from here now?
I can hear you, David.
Oh, there you go. You're coming back through now.
What about Frank now?
Fine, just for a second.
Ron.
Yes.
Are you there?
That was Ron. Can you hear Ron?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so we left off. I've been trying to close the show. I was talking about police officers and things that we've been having a lot of issues with police officers. I know Chicago has gone through some major embarrassments as well as anybody else. But then we have the police officers in Oklahoma. But it seems that people are now prosecuting police officers. So I see in the long run a revamping of how police officers are handling the people that they serve. What do you guys think?
Yeah, amen to that. I think that police officers throughout the nation need to be totally retrained and reorganized. There are so many cases of individuals being shot multiple times when they're not going towards the police officer but going away from the police officer.
Right.
I think it's the officers are being sent a signal and a message that they're not above the law and that it's not going to be tolerated because, just because they're police officers doesn't give them any special rights above and beyond what the ordinary citizen has, So I see the time when, as Frank was saying, there needs to be a retraining and it's a signal that they're being sent that, that's not going to be tolerated anymore. And now, with the pervasiveness of cameras everywhere, nobody can get away with anything. So, let them keep trying to shoot somebody while they're walking away and see if they can get away with it. I doubt it.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think there's a total retraining. I think they're going to have to separate a number of police officers from the police activities. And I think that we're going to need to take other models from other countries because statistically I was looking at, like, Iceland. I think they've killed one person in their entire existence as a country.
Wow.
One police officer has killed one person. And just reading that story, how they went about doing that, I mean, that was after, this is sort of like a hostage or a situation where they deliberately tried to, talk the person out of the building. And then they just had to, do what they had to do after many hours or days. Whereas, and then you take a country like England, where, if you look at the numbers, we kill 600, police officers kill 600 people annually with firearms, okay? And there's no nation on earth that is a developed country that kills those type of people, people.
So what's the reason? I mean, I'm sure that there's been studies to figure out why our country is so violent in comparison to others.
Well, I think I would think that as a police officer, part of the reasoning is because we have a high population density of people that have weapons themselves. Okay. And then we have one of the other problems that contribute to it is we are a multicultural society, whereas a lot of countries don't have the level of diversity that we have. And I think having diversity when you're not acquainted with the population as individually brings up fears, a high sense of fears. Your high sense of fears that you're going to be shot by a specific segment of the population. And we have people also, I think, I don't know if this exists in other countries, but we have people that probably don't show the level of respect that the police officer is looking for, and that kind of rubs the wrong way. That's my thoughts on it. Yes.
Frank, I agree with you. It's the multicultural aspect. I don't think police officers know how to deal with those different cultures.
Right.
And their first response is fight or flight. They would rather fight than to get the no that not all black people are dangerous, not all Mexicans or Hispanic cultures are illegal immigrants. So those type of things is what they need to learn.
Yeah.
Even though they patrol in those areas, they need to have a sensitivity class where they can afford more attention to the cultures than just going in there, I'm the police, I have a badge, you have to do what I say.
Well, they better learn fast because the face of this nation, you know, is changing. I mean, we've all heard this, that Hispanics are going to become the largest minority, and I forget what the year is, but I mean, you look at the major metropolitan cities in the U.S., you know, New York, L.A., Chicago, Miami, and there's a lot of people from all over the world. So I think our police forces are not keeping up with the times and the changes. And you know, like you said, they need sensitivity training. And it can't be what it used to be, whatever you want to call it, the good old boys club. You know, times are changing, and they need to reflect that.
Yeah, the police report reminds me, and this might be too derogatory, but it reminds me of a situation in America where when a Afro-American individual might have been killed or hung or something, and we thought we knew who the guilty party was, and we took them to trial, only to find that the jury didn't convict what we thought was a guilty party. And there was a feeling in America during those times that there was no justice. And there was also a feeling on the part of the person who did the ugly deed that they wouldn't get convicted of persons of their peers. I think the police officers have had the same type of advantage. And I agree with you, the world has changed. And they're not going to find communities like they used to find that says, you're a police officer, and just because you're a police officer, we're going to always give you the benefit of the doubt. I don't think they're going to get that type of blanket, blind support that they had in the past.
I would never give them the benefit of the doubt. And I'm sorry, David, I know you're an ex-police officer, but you know, some of the most corrupt people, at least in down here where I live, have been police officers. So, you know, I hate to say that, but you know, it deteriorates my trust in the police force, and you know, that's hard to overcome.
I heard somebody mention my Chicago Police Department. Growing up in Chicago as a black teen, having run into the police officer in Chicago was an everyday occurrence. On my 18th birthday, I remember being stopped downtown Chicago on the Magnificent Mile because me and my friends did not belong downtown. We went out to eat,
right,
but four police officers stopped us in an unmarked car. My dad's car was properly legalized in terms of plates and stickers. Insurance card, valid driver's license, but because we did not belong in that culture, we were stereotyped, we were tagged, we were gotten out of the car, we were kicked, we were beat, not to the point where we had bodily bruises, but we, hands on a freezing car, my birthday is in December, so in Chicago in December, you have cold weather.
Right.
So they did everything to demean us because we did not fit that culture. So it's a systematic unjust in every police department across the country. I don't care if you're in Chicago, Alabama, Miami, L.A. It's a systematic culture that they have that needs to be eradicated before anything gets better.
No.
I agree with you.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Well, as an ex-police officer, let me tell you that I have to agree with you. I have been on the other side, and I have actually seen police officers who, I remember there was an incident where a young man beat up a police officer, but other police officers came and got them and took him to jail. Well, they put him in the holding tank, and police officers every few minutes decided they would go in as group and beat him one by one because he didn't like police officers. I was in the car. My first time being in the car as a police officer, my partner, who was the lead, told me the reason he was a police officer because he liked to beat people's butts. And that was the only reason he was a police officer. He liked to beat people's butts. And I had, like, yes, in the car going, uh-oh, isn't that going to be good? So being on the other side, I can tell you, it is a good boys club in itself. It is a fraternity in itself. And those that are in charge, the old school guys, they still think like that. So to say they need training, if you're going to have the old guys doing the training, it's not going to work. What they need to do is people from the outside whose profession
right.
is
yeah, they,
training.
Yeah, they need to have people.
Then they need to get rid of all those old guys and replace them all. I mean, and maybe there's something to be learned from the way that police officers are trained in places that have big cities around the world, for example, Paris and London, that have a lot of ethnic diversity but don't have the same issues that we do.
But let me tell you, as a fraternity, if you have a good old boys club, and that's what they do. They like beating up people and stuff. And that's the way that station works. You come in and you're not like that, the fraternity is going to get you put out.
So where's the ACLU in all of this?
Well,
yeah,
the police union. And who sits on the police union? Old police officers. You know, you have some major problems. And saying you're going to get rid of the old police officer is not going to work because the union is not going to let you do that. And the city can't
right.
fight the union.
Yeah, you have to change. We had the same problem in the military. And the way you have to get that change, you know, you have to change the culture. For instance, certain people, when you're on a base, they work for the commanding officer. But certain people work for the commanding officer and the guy in Washington, D.C., or the admiral is two levels up, okay? So, you know, I could report into a command and my orders say that I work for you, but maybe I have to tell you at a given time that I also work for your boss, okay? And, you know, maybe I have to reveal to you that I also work for your boss, and he sent me here specifically to help you to change the culture. And that's what we've had to do during our discrimination and relearning phase in the military, because at a time we had ships that were being sabotaged because people were unhappy because they felt like they were being discriminated against or ignored and that there was no accommodation of the people. And that word accommodation is what I've been stressing, is that you do have to accommodate people to make everything work. And we have some people in our country that don't want to do that. But I've had to tell people, hey, you know, I do work for you, but I also work for your boss, the same guy you work for, particular person sent here to help you to make changes that are going to be a positive thing. And you may not like me and may not appreciate me, but you've got to work with me. You know, and that's the way it has to be. Because if you don't do that, then you don't have the courage or the situation. That doesn't mean that the bad guys like the Ku Klux Klan aren't going to try to take you out when you're off duty or sabotage your house or your car and stuff like that. And I agree with David on that. That certainly happens. So you have to have special individuals that can help make the changes in company. And they don't always need to be at the top. They need to be people that are in different levels of the organization that are making sure that what you're trying to accomplish is getting down. And it's sort of like the situation one day where a guy asked me, he told a guy a specific thing about his fraternization with another lady. So he sent out this emissary, and the emissary said to him, hey, you know, so the boss said, you can't do that and you shouldn't do that. Well, the individual said, hey, if I was you, I wouldn't let the boss see it. In other words, he didn't tell him to stop. What he basically told him is, you know, don't do it where the boss can see you. Later years, the boss asked me, he said, hey, didn't I tell that guy? And I said, yeah, you did. But what he told the other guy was, you know, don't get caught. So that's not changing the culture that way. You have to make sure that your orders are, you have to have people down in the filter system to make sure your orders are being seriously carried out.
Let me throw something in the mix here. And you are going to chuckle when I say this, the word Donald Trump. And his comments about keeping Muslims out of the United States. What do you think that's going to do for race relations if he becomes president, and police departments, and who feel now that they have an open to do whatever they want for Muslims because the president doesn't even want them in the country? So it kind of opens up a can of worms, don't you think?
I think it's going to set us back 100 years. If he ever became president, because of his philosophies on immigration for Muslims, Hispanics, his policies on women, policy on African Americans, he's living back like it's 1954.
But what's really scary is everyone is saying this who has some type of intelligence, but the United States, I mean, the regular GOPs are all cheering him. People who vote are cheering Trump. The people who really know how this is going to come out are kind of like, no, that wasn't good. Other politicians, that wasn't good. But the people that are voting are the ones that are cheering him, saying this is how we should live. That's kind of scary.
Well, he may get the popular vote, but I don't see him being president. And Frank and I were talking about this while you were off air, that I agree. I mean, I have the feeling and the sense that we've taken lots of steps backwards with he's not even president, but just the comments that he's been making are inciting in a lot of people this hatred and this mistrust of foreigners and, you know, just people that are different from him. And it's not good for this country. And you know, I've said this repeatedly, the United States, in my opinion, will be the laughing stock of the entire world if Donald Trump ends up being president.
I think we're in for World War III if Donald Trump becomes president, because he's going to say the wrong thing to the wrong country.
Well, let's put it this way. I think that he's, I think that he would be a detriment to our way of life and our and what the things that supposedly this nation stands for. I do not expect that he'll even get close to being the president of the United States. And one of the things I said is I have to imagine that his majority right now, his at 30% or so, I think that I've been told that represents about 12% of the GOP. Okay, that's, you know, that 30% popularity that he has or whatever, it's only 12% of the GOP. What, you know, the reason why I hesitate to ever criticize him, because I'm always interested in finding out the number of people that he can garner to his side, because that gives me an indicator, as I was explaining before, of work that we still have to do out there, people who have a prejudicial viewpoint and what I would call an un-American viewpoint. And in other words, how many bigots are there still out there that would take away other people's liberty because and not be really American? So that's the benefit to me of having him run for office. It does allow him to attract people, and it does take the cover off of their intent, okay? So, you know, for me, I would be very, just like I used to see rebel flags in the military. If I saw a rebel flag, and we outlawed them to be able to bring them on bases because it was not good for morale. And you see, if you didn't provide that type of accommodation, then you'd have people that wouldn't do their best to up support the United States. And I think that's what happens when you get a guy like Trump, is he's ISIS's best friend. Okay, because he helps them with recruiting. I think that if he was the president of the United States, his language and his style being undiplomatic would offend people and make us look like a bunch of cowboys, okay? And we are already considered the Wild Wild West based on the number of people we kill per year with guns. And I just think that – I don't think we're going to go in that direction. I think what's going to happen is that Trump is going to reach a saturation point and he's going to fade away. And I think if he doesn't fade away, he's going to end up, you know, making a third-party run.
So who do you think is going to be the Republican nominee?
Well, I think in the best interest of the United States, I always think it's a moderate person. So you could it could be Bush, it could be Rubio, it could be Kasich. Or they could come up with someone else, or it'd be Paul Ryan for that matter. Okay. But I think if you look at it, even if you're against Republican brand, those are people that a lot of people could live with. And those are people that could have relations with other countries and other people and not have gigantic walls built up. You know, Trump will have – he doesn't have to build a wall and have the Mexican government pay for it. He's already built the wall. He's already built the wall with his relationships with most Middle East countries, et cetera. And we need those people as our allies because without them as our allies – we're more susceptible to being bombed and more ruckus and problems. You know, you want people working for you. We've got a lot of Muslims that are in the armed forces of the United States who do their job every day. And we've had some people, Muslims and non-Muslims, who went berserk and killed other people. But that happens whether you're pink, yellow, black, or white. Because we allow them and get them in possession of weapons, or sometimes they're not in a good mental condition. So that's what I see. I see a moderate candidates coming to the forefront.
I hope that's the case. And you know, if I agree that I don't think he would ever make it to president, but if he did, we would
yeah.
be at much higher risk, I think, of a terrorist attack with him as president than not.
Well, this is to me, I don't know if any of you are old as I am, but I could name some people that are similar that have run for office. I can say General LeMay. I can say George Wallace. I can say, you know, there's a few people like him.
And they've used scare tactics. Right?
Excuse me?
They use scare tactics.
Yeah. Well, they were rallying the troops. They were, you know, if you look at Wallace, you know, he was running for president. He thought that he could rally those people who were alienated because we were going to integration. All right? And so you can imagine, I actually was on his support party when he came over for a briefing. I was at the station in Hawaii on the headquarters of the commander in Chief Pacific. And, you know, we had to receive that gentleman and give him a briefing and a reception and all that. And, you know, did I like that? No, but as it worked out, you know, he fizzled and went elsewhere. So you've got the similar situation. You know, Trump is going to come in and have to be briefed as he gets higher enough the food chain and closer to the election time. And then you're going to have people that are Muslims, Hispanics, that are part of those work details, where they've got to be military professional enough to continue doing their job and hope that the good senses of the American public turn them out or never allow them to come in. And that's what's happened in the past. I mean, we've had General LeMay was going to go ahead and just bomb the use of derogatory terms for the North Vietnamese. General LeMay, and we had the senator from Arizona as well, Barry Goldwater, you know, and those people didn't get to where they wanted to get.
All right. We just finished the United States with other countries, and I think, Ron, I want you to take lead on this, if you would, please. The Weather Summit we just had in Paris. I know that last week we were talking about it, and you had some concerns about it, Ron.
Yeah, I mean, actually, my concerns have quieted a little bit now that I know that they've reached an agreement. And I forget the total number of countries, but it's impressive. I think it's like 170 or 180 countries. And what I like most about what happened in Paris is that every country, including developing countries, which in the past have been pardoned, if you will, and not made to follow, you know, the strict laws or what have you. This time around, my understanding, the way I interpreted what I read, was that every country, including the developing countries like India and China, for example, have to follow the same rules as everybody else. And, you know, at the same time, you know, I'm glad that this is taking place, because I think we're at a point, and I've heard this over, and I'm sure we all have, where there's no turning back, and if things don't change rapidly and drastically, I think this world is going to be changing dramatically. And, you know, I'm 52, so I won't see the wars over water shortages, or I don't think I will. Who knows? I could be wrong. But and I hope that I don't. I hope things turn around. But then at the same time, you know, I'm a little bit weary that, you know, maybe this is all just for show. And, you know, if you look at the two biggest countries, the two countries that have polluted and have caused global climate disasters the most, it's the United States and China. So, you know, our way of life is directly responsible for the situation that the planet is in right now. And I hope that we, you know, under the leadership of our elected officials, that we start, you know, using solar panels and all the different ways that we can help this climate crisis.
All right. Harold, are you still there? I see that I might be having difficulties. All right, so it's a good conversation, although I'm sorry to everyone who might have had listened in and listened to our technical difficulties. But again, if you'd like to call in, we're at 646-668-8740. We got about another 3 or 4 minutes. I wanted to talk about the weather portion just a little bit more. I wanted to get Prince's views on where he thinks we are, because I know that in Michigan, where I am right now, there has just been a dusting, what they call a dusting of snow. At one time, it's all been gone, and usually by this time here, there's snow everywhere. So I think that the warming trend is actually there. I'm kind of convinced that it is, so I'm more to the side of, yeah, we need to do something, and I'm glad that these countries are now standing to the plate saying we need to do something. I'm not sure what it is we can do for climate change, but if anybody has any thoughts, give us a call.
Sure.
Go ahead, Frank.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead and give your number out, David, and then I'll...
Go ahead. Give us a call at 646-668-8740. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay, so I attended one of these talks, Holy Father, Pope of Rome, Catholic Church, came out and issued a paper on the this weather situation we have. And, of course, a lot of Catholics don't like that because they don't think it's scientific. But the Pope, in fact, was a scientist. He was a chemist. So basically, we're required as Christians to protect our environment. And there's a clear evidence that our environment has been affected. So the long and the short of it is that people who have good jobs and make lots of money, they're going to lose their houses, but they'll be able to go out and buy the same house back again. they're going to be able to have houses without insurance, but that's okay. They can still buy us. But the people that are really affected by this climate change are poor people. And the secondary group of people, because they can't go out and do the and replicate those type of things, the second people is our defense is affected by climate change. The people that the last meeting that I went to, I had the former oceanographer of the Navy, a college professor at a local university, who was also, I think, an oceanographer in the Navy. Former oceanographer was on contract by the government to go out and analyze all the bases, because what they're concerned about is the flooding on those bases. And so we had a submarine officer there. We had two former oceanographers. One's the head oceanographer of the Navy, and we went through that process. So, yeah, this climate change agreement, my understanding of it is that it's going to cost us money, the people, you and I, and other people money, because what we're going to do is, because we were big polluters, we're going to send money to these other countries so they don't have to be big polluters, so they can have better equipment to do their manufacturing. So we're going to have feedback from that, I'm sure, from people in America that don't see the need to do anything to make any changes. But climate, right now it's been the last couple of days in Virginia, in the Hampton Roads area, which includes Norfolk and Virginia Beach, it's been around 65 to 70 degrees, which, you know, this is December. Tomorrow to be that temperature as well. And then we have these extreme tilts. And this whole entire region that I'm in is a flood zone. You know, we're at zero height level from the ocean front. And so we can literally, when Norfolk, when it rains in Norfolk, I get the so-and-so out of there real quick, because the flash flooding can come very quickly down there because of the lack of space to take on additional waters.
All right. Well, for those of you that hung in with us where we're having our technical issues and we kind of worked those out, we're glad we did. We appreciate you and hope that you enjoy the conversation that we've had tonight. We'll be back again next Sunday at 6 o'clock. Once again, this is A Man's Voice. We will be here every Sunday at 6 p.m. Without the technical issue. This was the end of them. So we'll see you again next week. So for my guests, thanks for coming, and we'll talk again next week.
Thank you, David.
All right.
Have a good one, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye now.